And now, Sports Day with Jared Healy and Sam McClure for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. I haven't said that for a while. Finally, the AFL ladder tells you what we've been spruiking since February, that Melbourne is first, daylight is second, and it's a race in three or four to see who plays off in the grand final. Two games clear now on top, the Demons. They're a long way in front of the pack. But as always, it's no guarantee of a second flag. You only had to look at the unbelievable form of a very young and depleted Carlton demolish Sydney in the second quarter to know that the upper level of a few teams is scary good. But Melbourne's average still remains miles ahead of the next best. Pity the umpires' average has slipped so far. I'm not sure what's going on with their coaching, but I do know it's at a level that should be of great concern to those in power at headquarters. Clearly, the dissent rule needs a reset. It's robbed the game of emotion. It's robbed the umpires of common sense. The holding the ball rule is a mess. Pushing the back rule is a mystery why it's so difficult to apply, and the nitpicking one off decisions against Lachie Neale and Tom Mitchell just as examples makes you ask the question, what the hell is going on and what the hell is being taught to these young umpires who are paying decisions that the guns like Stevic and Rosebery wouldn't even bat an eyelid at. But that for another discussion through the week. Scoop, great to be back. Let's just begin with the second quarter of the Blues. How good was that? Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Great to have you back.
You got the chest out after that.
Great to have you back. I was good on Friday night, wasn't I? I went to Marvel Stadium.
Look, I love the atmosphere of that stadium. It was unbelievable to have a full house.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't like Marvel Stadium. I'm not sure.
Well, it's a nightmare
I'm
to
not
get
sure
in and
why.
Out of. That's
it
why.
Is a great stadium. It's a great experience.
It's a great experience when you're sitting in there and there's a packed crowd.
Oh,
there's not many other things
one of the
that are
best
great
games
about
I've
it.
Seen
that's
this
why
year,
the AFL are trying to tear it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good to see people actually turning up to the stadium as well, which is a rarity. And we saw on Sunday that not everyone turns up.
No, it's a totally different game, of course.
Are you not actually defending them again, are you?
No, it was a different game. I mean, I think the crowd was pitiful, but...
Jared, Melbourne supporters aren't turning up. What's going on?
Well, it's not just Melbourne supporters. No. Kangaroo supporters aren't turning
no,
up.
No, no, no.
The Kangaroo's home game, wasn't it?
58,000 turned up for round one.
Yeah.
For the flag unfurling.
It was
the
COVID.
First time that
COVID,
Victorian
though.
Fans had their chance to
that
see,
was COVID.
See their players. And then I was discouraged a few weeks ago, and you know I was, from doing an editorial when less than 40,000 turned up to watch the game against Hawthorn. That's 2 weeks after Carlton
had
66,000 on
yep.
a Sunday.
Yep.
But, Jared, I've had enough now. 13,000.
13!
Thank you, Hutto. 13,000.
He comes in on time like that.
For a game of football involving the reigning premiers. They get that crowd at ammo matches. What is happening? I mean, I know it's cold today, Jared, but the ski fields haven't opened that early.
Oh, you can't go with that this
well, then
early
why aren't they turning up?
133-693, 133-693.
Get if out you wanna, there and support your players,
if
Melbourne
If you want
fans.
To pick up a spinal ease pillow, give us a call, 133-693. Maybe this bloke will know.
Lloyd!
You haven't missed a game in 15 years, Lloydie. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam. What ammo club is for having 13,000 fans to support? I'm sorry, it wasn't when you were back in your days for the old Xavier.
Be a final. It'd be a big final.
But yeah, I'm with you. I think the habits of people, I think the last few years have got very, very comfortable.
No, I understand.
Is
that.
It harder to go to the MCG now? I mean,
yes, it is.
I keep getting told that the car park is very rarely open. And if it is, it's 50%. You've got to buy a reserve seat where you've never had to buy one before.
So the biggest problem is with that, say the MCC, which we know that a lot of Melbourne supporters are MCC members, is that, Jared, if you wanted to go with your nine best mates and there were 10 of you, it's very hard to get seats together because you have to go and get reserve seats online. It's not like it was 3 or 4 years ago where a bunch of you could just turn up and you could save some seats and most of you could sit together. So I take that on face value that that's making it more difficult. But that argument falls down when other clubs are getting big numbers.
And it's why Carlton are great for the competition because I was there Friday night too and they're they've been a juggernaut waiting to happen. It's just the team hasn't 80, performed.
80,000 plus members now.
80,000 plus members and they will be the...
How many will they get there
Sunday.
To the G on Sunday
it's
against Collingwood?
Hopefully it's another 85,000.
That'd be huge.
It would be massive. Whereas Melbourne, Jared, this isn't going to last forever. So if ever you're going to be going to watch your team play, this is it, because they are just riding a wave. Yeah, enjoy it. I remember when we were like this, Jared, a long, long time ago. Yeah. I wish
2000?
Yeah, I wish I didn't take it for granted, because yeah. I just thought, hey, this will just keep happening. And before you know it, you're not making finals and you never, ever get back to this again. So Jake Bowie, he expects to turn up to the footy.
Hasn't played in a loss yet.
And just win. Everyone, they just expect to win. But it'll turn. It'll turn at some point.
What about the form of Clayton Oliver?
Oh, it's just great to see play. He's won best and fairest.
He's won three, and he's yet to be 24.
And he's getting better. So I think that's what he's doing. The champions just get better and better and never rest on their laurels, and that's why they are what they are.
Well, I reckon it's a big game. Fremantle will be looking for another win. They've fallen on a bit of a hole. Got a couple of big games coming. I think they play Melbourne and then Brisbane.
They do.
The next two. So it's a challenge. And then the Saints. So the once fancied Fremantle Dockers, I think they'll still get there, but they've got to start finding a way to win.
Yeah, as soon as you went to Java, they started losing. I wonder if that's a coincidence. 133-693. I think the Melbourne fans have come to support their own. Sam's on the road. Welcome, Sam.
Hey, good evening, guys. Look, every week we get 60,000 new COVID cases, and they've got to all isolate for a week. They have close contacts also, so that could have an impact, don't you reckon?
Yeah, it could, but it didn't have an impact on the Carlton crowd the night before. That's, I guess, the comparison that Sam's making. Appreciate your call, Sam. Clarkey, you've got a better excuse than that one?
Prices, mate.
Prices?
You got fuel, membership, taking the kids there, pies, soft drink. You can go to Coles and buy six bottles of water cheaper than, you know, one bottle.
Righto, Clarkey, economics is the issue. Joe's from Clifton Hill. Joe?
Couple of reasons. I'm a 39-year continuous AFL member. I've got a couple of university degrees. I'm still a practicing professional, but try getting into the ground. I can't navigate that thing. Were it not for my three adult sons and beautiful daughters-in-law, I'd never get a ticket to get into the place. They have made it so difficult. Give me back my ticket. Secondly...
Which ground are we talking about here, Joe?
Any ground.
Okay.
Try going to the, you can't just rock up to the MCG. You've got to go through this
through the hoops.
Crap of getting from yeah, through the hoops. I can't do it, and I can tell you I've got plenty of mates who are in the same position. It's too hard. I do it because, as I said, I'm lucky I've got sons who can do it for me.
Yep.
The other thing is this umpiring, it's getting beyond a joke. It's just turning people off the game, and the AFL just does not want to listen. Poor Brad Scott's being put up there. He's the apologist for these people who make these decisions. Last night's game, Collingwood, fantastic. But to see these stupid free kicks paid for deliberate out of bounds, the word is deliberate, not accidental, not incidental. The word is deliberate.
It's not the rule anymore, is it? It's insufficient intent to keep the ball in. It's not deliberate anymore, is it, Jared?
No, that's true, yeah. Lordy. But I think what you're saying, Joe, is that there is an unease out there with some of the decisions that are being paid. I mean, there's always unease, but it just seems at this stage of the year, we've got to a level where some of the decisions are unrecognisable. I mean, some of the ones against Lachie Neal, it was a one-off, I know.
That was a shocker.
But what would go through the guy's mind to sort of, what training, what sort of instigated him blowing that decision? Whereas Matt Stevic, he would have looked at that and said, you know, I've seen that 1,000 times. I'm not paying that. There's something going on with the way they're coached, with the way they feel they have to, you know, pick out these nitpicking decisions that I think is frustrating people at a new level.
I know there's some other clubs that are struggling with crowds. I read today that there were 5,057 people for the GWS West Coast game.
Mm.
I'd love to speak to the person who came up with that figure.
Creative?
Creative by about 100%, I would suggest.
100%. So you reckon there was 2,500 there?
Jared, if there were 5,000 people at that game on the weekend, I'll hand in my accreditation.
Well, I don't think you can ever tell when it's that low because there's so few people that it's impossible to tell by the eye looking at the
I would suggest that's a little bit like someone winning the quaddie, Jared, and saying that they won 1,000 when they actually won 600. They just decided to just increase it by a little bit.
That said, there was plenty to look at in that particular game. You'll get Dave Matthews ringing up again, Sam, the way you're travelling. But it was quite a successful emergence from a good mate of yours.
Yeah, Mark McVay, first game, and made some changes. Himmelberg went forward to back, and Canelio back in the midfield. Callum Ward had a little bit of a different role. Peatling kicked three goals and had 23 disposals. Yeah. Was something I hadn't seen before. But
got a bit of handball and a bit of tsunami back.
Isn't it amazing, though, how interim coaches free things up? And I sort of actually said to Lawrence, our producer, around Hawthorn, to me, are playing... Sam's got his team playing like a bit of an interim coach. He's just so bold with how his team's playing. I'm not so sure how it'll stack up over the journey, Sam, when you're conceding such big scores, but he's been pretty bold with how he's been playing the game. I'm not sure.
Good game, wasn't it?
Yeah, great game of footy. One of the games of the season as well, that one yesterday, with how exciting that was. But
Sam Frost going forward was a surprise.
Sam Frost, yeah, as well. So I think McVay, I think playing that positive way with the list they've got, we'll see how they go against Brisbane at the Gabba, but that's how his players would want to play. They've been held back for too long under Leon Cameron.
Look, I think it was really refreshing. Mm. As you said, we're not sure how long it's going to last for, but when you get Jesse Hogan, I mean, Jesse Hogan is he's an exceptional talent. We haven't seen the best of him yet. He could finish his career in a blaze of glory over the next 5 or 6 years. Himmelberg, the back line, I think, has been screaming for that to be done for years.
You've been screaming for years.
Well, I'm glad somebody's put in there, because he doesn't do enough in front of the goals to justify him there. They've got a weakness in the back line. Stick him down there. So many great centre-backs have started off as average forwards. Surprise, well, you were never going to go down there, Lloydie, but you could have done it on your ear.
Joe, give us a call back. You want a Spinal Ease pillow, spinalease.com.au. And Clarkie from Echuca, give us a call. We're going to give you a Signet Boost power bank valued at $59.95. We've got some breaking news. Sam Switkowski from the Fremantle Dockers has been charged with serious misconduct against Jack Ginnivan yesterday. The incident was classified as direct referral to the tribunal, and the player cannot accept an early plea.
Any further info on that?
No, we'll look into it.
Big loss. He's one of the best small forwards in the game, Sam Switkowski.
We'll give you more with Matthew Lloyd. Here is here for Maccas right after this on Sports Day.
Matthew Lloyd is here for Maccas. My Maccas Rewards has arrived. Earn rewards with every Maccas run.
Yes, Matthew Lloyd live in studio. Jared Healy is back from the surf trip in Java. And John Longmire is joining us. Pardon me, Jared?
Too much detail.
No, we like detail on this show. John Longmire is the coach of the Sydney Swans, a good friend of this show. He's been labelled by our good host here, Jared, as one of the games of the season in front of a packed house at Marvel Stadium. Unfortunately, the Swans couldn't get the 4 points, but looking to bounce back against the Tigers this week. John, welcome.
G'day, gents.
Didn't look like the game of the season from your eyes, I'm sure, at half time, John, but it was a bloody good comeback.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jared. I'm not sure I said it would have been sitting there at half time thinking that, but have 9 goals kicked against us in a quarter. We won the other 3 quarters, and our second half was... We came home really strongly, and the positive to come out of it was we didn't throw the towel in at half time. We came out after half time and had a real crack, and we're a bit wasteful in that last quarter going forward. We didn't really connect with our forward half as well as what we should have. In the end, we sort of won the 3 quarters, lost one by 39 points, and lost the game, obviously.
It was an incredible second quarter. I mean, it was just great for the game, great for people watching, whether you're barrack for Carlton or Sydney. It probably didn't matter, but it was just electric. It must have been awesome down on the ground. And the pressure, I think, was world record of 270 that Carlton brought to bear, which just goes to show that, there are levels and levers that clubs can pull if everybody's pulling in the same direction that can get them to reach great heights.
Yeah, I reckon the Swan supporters probably wouldn't have enjoyed it. I didn't that second quarter. To Carlton's credit, I think for much of that quarter, they were 2.47 pressure.
Yeah.
And that mightn't mean much to the general public, but, if you're sort of working in the footy space from day to day, that's a pretty significant amount of pressure for a sustained period. To their credit, they were very good in that quarter. And, we need to make sure we take the momentum. Sometimes that happens in a game, that opposition are going to get a real run on and are really playing well. And for that period, we've just got to make sure that the damage, we limit it a bit before it obviously gets to 9 goals. And if we had to cut it down a bit more than that, somewhere near half, it gives us a chance to win the game. So teams are still going to get momentum. But it's a bit like a couple of weeks ago, we played Brisbane. Out of those 2 games, the Brisbane and Carlton game, we've only lost 2 quarters.
Mm.
But those 2 quarters, we've given up too much ground.
John, so in terms of shutting momentum down and halving it, as you said, from 9 goals to 4, was it what you could did after halftime, where you've probably controlled the ball a little bit more? What are the type of levers you can pull to stop momentum?
Yeah, there's a few levers, Lloyd, in there. There's I think that winning the centre bounces is one. Obviously with the 6-6-6 rule, it can be difficult at times, but I think over the last 5 weeks we've been equal with Carlton as far as centre bounce clearances, so we've generally been okay with that. There's no question when you get your hands on the ball to be able to just take the sting out of it for a second. We probably didn't do that as well as what we could have. And then just making sure after half time it was just sort of some basic cracking in. It sounds complicated, but sometimes the game we can complicate the hell out of it. But we just had a couple of secondary stoppages and just got the momentum back that way. Pushed the ball forward, took a bit of distance, and then we're able to score off the back of that.
Can you give us an update on Josh Kennedy, John, and where he sits with his hamstring? Is it tendon?
Yeah, Lordy, a bit of tendon, unfortunately, for Josh. Just an unfortunate situation he found himself in with his leg, and he was all out of whack there. He's trying to do the right thing by the team, and unfortunately suffered a hamstring tendon injury, not enough to have an operation, but enough to keep him out for a significant amount of time, 8 to 10 weeks. And, that's the first time he's ever had that amount of time out. And, it's obviously a feel for Josh.
Will he look to push hard to play that, get back to play at least a game or two and finals, John?
Well, we had a good discussion with Josh today. He's a beauty, and, he's got a really positive mindset already. He was disappointed and flat that, he hasn't missed much footy, but he's also understanding that he's had a really good run as far as injuries are concerned. And he said, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'm a really positive mindset as far as getting my rehab right and having a crack and doing the best I can in that space. And then I'll also help you blokes out in whatever space you need to. And so he's going to help us out with some roles at the back end of the year.
John, it seems to be a hot topic for a myriad of reasons. Have you got a view on umpiring right now in the game?
No.
I had about four different options I thought you might have taken, but no is one. Can I just explore a little bit more, though, John? The Chad Warner one worries me to a degree because, what Chad Warner did after being penalised for running 17 metres, it was natural and it was...
It wasn't descent.
And I just think that the footy world absolutely supports Brad Scott and Andrew Dillon and the push to sort of lead the way. But we've got to make sure we're not making it a robotic response because I think it robs the game of something to a degree.
Yeah, I think when I first came out, I think I was asked about it. And I think everyone's initial response was we've got to be really clear. There's three umpires on the ground. You've got to be really clear with is it a descent or not descent. Well, I was always a bit not sure about that. I just think a bit of the old common sense. Back people in that they've got the common sense to make the right call. They don't always get it right, but I'm not sure whether the umpires have said that was right or wrong, that call. I haven't heard. So, I don't think there was any dissent in what he was doing.
No.
And I understand where the umpires are going and the AFL's going with it, but I thought he didn't handle it too bad, to be honest.
So we push on to Friday night, another big Friday night game for Sydney, and it's against the Tigers. They've got a couple of big injuries, but it's almost cutthroat now, isn't it? We're only midway through the season, and yet you're both sitting in that same spot in the eight, and 4 points looks like 8 points.
Yeah, it's a big game, isn't it? I mean, it's... this is what you want to play for, isn't it? Last Friday we played Carlton. Was it 4v5th? And Friday night, to have a red hot crack at it. And both teams were up for the contest. We were disappointing in the second, but the other three were okay. And then this week again, another one against a really informed team over the last month. I think they've only lost the two quarters over the last month, so they're they're in strong form. The Tigers, and they're playing the way you imagine Richmond play. So, we're looking forward to that contest again. And, these are the type of games you want to be playing in, and we're really looking forward to it. Our younger players, our experienced players, we're looking forward to that contest.
Hey, John, a broader footy one. Post-COVID, where are you at in terms of what you'd like in terms of your coaching staff, development staff, everything to do in a footy department, and the things you might want to get for next year? Are there still things that you, you're a long way off wanting from a footy department perspective and coaching perspective?
Yeah, I think you put my view on this, Lordie, that footy department's been decimated and the workload hasn't dropped. Initially, when the $3.5 million was carved out of footy departments, there was going to be less in the playing lists. And what happens is that you never want to give your players less service, so you're doing it on a third less staff. And those staff obviously are still on massive pay cuts. So I feel for footy departments across the country because they're all sort of working absolutely to the their fingers to the bone. And I just don't think it's right what the industry's doing with footy departments if the way it's been handled. And you would have thought that there would have been some comeback, but still seems a fair way off, unfortunately.
You don't have any more clarity about next year in that space?
No idea. I mean, it seems like the footy departments are ones that are carrying the can, and that's the way it is.
John, we appreciate your time. Good luck Friday night.
All right, no worries. Thank you.
John Lamai, coach of the Sydney Swans.
A sports update thanks to Tyre Power. Save $100 on Cooper four-wheel drive tyres. Kevin De Bruyne!
Cacophonic joy. It's hard to actually go past the commentary of being the best thing about that game, but such is the amazement of which Peter Drury commentates. But Manchester City doing it the Manchester City way, coming from 2-0 down against Aston Villa to score three times in 5 minutes to beat Liverpool, well, to stop Liverpool and deny them of this amazing quadruple run that they were going on. It was actually a phenomenal morning of sport, Lloydie. I'm not sure how much of the game you saw. Jared would have been in the ocean, I assume.
I was actually watching the golf, to be honest, Scoop.
Were you?
Yep.
Yep.
So, wasn't that an amazing turnaround?
So had Liverpool already won to put themselves
in? So Liverpool had actually, weirdly enough, it never looked like going to Liverpool because Liverpool were never in front while City were behind. It didn't have the same drama of it 2013 or whenever Aguero scored that 12, was it? Thank you, Lawrence. It scored that winner. But it was still dramatic nonetheless. And unfortunately, Jared, I feel like I say this every few weeks now, Dan Ricciardo's tough start to the F1 season has continued.
Yes.
He has finished 12th at the Spanish Grand Prix. Max Verstappen, your man, won again. Dan Ricciardo and McLaren, just not a marriage meant to be.
Moving on, did you watch the US PGA?
Yeah, absolutely. Lucas Herbert, I was barracking for, who looked at our best chance for some time.
Well, he didn't feature in the end, though, but it was an amazing turnaround. It was another really big melt on the 18th hole for Pereira.
Wrong club, Jared?
Well, geez, a swing. Didn't matter what club he had in his hand with that particular swing. It was horrible. But anyway, that was one of the major issues. And for the winner to be 7 strokes down, Scoop.
It's huge.
To come back and win with 2 putts to win in a playoff was quite amazing.
Just quickly, Jared. Patrick Dangerfield, this is just coming through.
Yeah.
Sidelined as he completes a mid-season conditioning block. Geelong saying they're managing their dynamic star conservatively after he was subbed out with a calf complaint.
It was interesting. Sunday footy show yesterday, Kane Corn said he feels like he wasn't whacking Danger. He said for longevity, he should look at potentially losing a few kilos and maybe it could help him. Wayne Carey went pretty hard on him on Twitter.
Called him a sheepdog.
And Kane's been very quick to tweet Wayne Carey the article tonight around just his comments. It wasn't a negative. It was just saying for longevity like other players have done in the game.
Well, it's probably going to become more regular with older players having...
Like Travis Spoke's done it well, hasn't he?
Yeah, having a few weeks off through the middle of the season. And for those people wondering what cacophonic sound meant or cacophonic joy was...
Cacophonic, yeah.
Harsh or jarring sound, dissonant sense, harshness in the sound of words or phrases, an incongruous or chaotic mixture, a striking combination of cacophony of colour, a cacophony of smells.
I'm going to get cacophonic into my next article.
You need to, Scoop.
He's a very wise man, Jared Healy.
Thank you, Jonesy, and enjoy PJ. Wimbledon.
More Sports Day with Matthew Lloyd right after this.
Yeah, I've got to be really careful here. He's... been so dominant, and then, yeah, there are reasons why he wasn't in the second half. That's all I'll say. No, we'll do some follow-up, but he kept fighting, kept bringing the ball to ground, and that's what he does. So we'll work our way through it through the course of the week. But, he was just outstanding in that first half.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Jared Healy and Matthew Lloyd in the studio. So that's the voice of Luke Beveridge, Jared, talking about the treatment of his star forward, Aaron Norton, specifically by Sam Collins of the Gold Coast Suns, and saying that they were going to take it to the AFL. It's just another layer of this umpiring issue, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I did the game. I must admit, he was amazing the first half. It was just a joy to watch a bloke who, he was unstoppable. He was Superman and Batman rolled into one. I didn't quite pick up the restrictions that was put on him. He had Thompson on him before he got injured. They made the move and Collins went on to him after Thompson got injured. But, I mean, I think it's really, this is about the next 12 weeks rather than what happened on the weekend. He's looking for a bit more protection and sick and tired. It's we've seen the same with, I reckon Richmond were doing the same for Tom Lynch about this time last year. Happens on a regular basis for key forwards.
But I think Luke he'll have to respond again. Now they'll be asked about it at his next press conference. And you know, I wonder if there's nothing there, does he need to apologise to the Gold Coast Suns? Or would he have that have happened behind the scenes if there's nothing to see?
Is it a go at the Gold Coast or is it a go at the AFL, do you think, Lloydie?
I thought it'd have to be, that's a good question. First of all, it's on Collins, thinking maybe the work he was doing off the ball, and then he's not getting rewarded for it. But watching the vision today, unless there's something that we missed or something else, I thought Collins played the perfect game as a defender, and you teach defenders to play that way.
What was he doing that you thought was...
He wouldn't let Norton get that run and jump at the footy.
Okay.
He just kept constant touch on him to not allow him to launch, which you have
The first half, or the first quarter and a half until they moved him, he was playing him in front and Norton just launched.
Mm. He just kept getting touch. He just buffered him, didn't allow it. And no forward wants that. And that's how he played him really well.
Lloyd, he just won off the bat. And it's not a criticism because this kid is, he's a kid. He's in his second or third year. But Matt Rowell had 5 possessions at the end of the match, and he played in the centre for, I think, 100% of it. It might have been 85. But I just wonder what the strategy there is. What was the thinking in the box? They nearly pinched that game with Tuke Miller and him, playing average games, Tuke, and Rowell played a poor game. But 5 possessions and you stay in the middle the whole game, it's bewildering.
Well, the worry for him, I like him, but where else can you play him? That's what he's got to try and develop himself to try and win more outside ball because he always was inside ball and that's it at the moment. There's no outside easy possession.
I think he's been I get the feeling, Lordy, there's something going on with the programming. I think he's thinking structures, defence. I mean, this kid grew up just eating the football. Mm. Just go and get the ball, mate.
Yep. Just on that, in the same game, Bailey Smith, his running capacity.
Nice,
so we saw Langdon get shut down by McGuinness.
Yeah.
I can't, the time's got to come where you go, how do we stop this guy? And how do we limit him?
Yep.
Bont's going forward now, so you can play a player on him. I don't think it's worth trying to stop McRae's 40 or, Livers clearance. It's Bailey and what he does because he's inside, he's outside. But I can't wait to see the first person who tries it and whether they can actually cope with this.
I'll need a motorbike.
Exactly right, because it's hard to remember. There's Sam Walsh is a freak.
Yeah,
but
he could run with him.
It's interesting to see if there's many in the comp. There'd be probably less than one hand that could go with him.
What about the former Crisp, who was a tagger initially, went in the back line. Now he's just a genuine all-Australian level mid.
Well, that's going to lead later, Jared, into my Cairns top 7.
I like it.
Mm. And it's he doesn't like the word steak knives, so I'm going to use sweeteners. The best
add-ons.
Add-ons, the best sweeteners the game has seen, Jared.
Yeah, I know that everyone seems to be talking about Jordan Dugowie's contract. You'd be offering Jack Crisp a longer term at more money than Jordan Dugowie right now, wouldn't you?
Well, it was interesting. I was thinking about that watching the game. Crisp is just continuing to fire. And
he's a gun.
Dugowie, his upside is incredible. He's got A-grade talent, but he doesn't produce it often enough to warrant the biggest of contracts. How that unravels, Lloydie, is going to be of great interest through the year.
And have you both seen the Sam Switkowski vision since
I have.
It's been directly referred to the tribunal. Any early assessments, Jared?
Well, it looks like simply a chicken wing tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what you get for a chicken wing tackle. I mean, it's abhorrent up in the northern states with rugby league.
Chris Judd.
3 to 4 or something?
Did Chris Judd get 3 for a similar sort of tackle?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sending him there, he has to explain himself. What were you doing?
Yep.
So it's going to be a hard one to get around for Switkowski, I would have thought.
Yep, agree with that. Let's go to this man.
It's now time for a BlueBet update. BlueBet's AFL 12-point halftime early payout is available on all games this weekend. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
Welcome, Richard Humiston.
Evening, gentlemen. They say a week is a long time in football. Fremantle, when I spoke to you this time last week, were $9 to win the premiership. They are just one loss. That's all it took, one loss out to $21. Kilda, Western Bulldogs, Geelong, Sydney, Carlton, Richmond, Brisbane, all ahead of them. So they're a fickle bob, AFL punters. And again, I say this every single week, Melbourne now into $2.30. It is still far, far, far better than bank interest, and it's almost as certain, I would say. Melbourne, $2.30. Brisbane Lions are $5.50, and Richmond actually now third favourite to win the flag, if you can believe it or not. Can't believe I'm saying that.
So. Can you just give us how much value Melbourne are by telling us what you think they'll be on grand final day?
Well, I mean, if you take their track record now and they go through undefeated, they're going to be about $1.10.
Yep.
But I mean, barring some significant injuries, they're going to finish on top of the ladder, and at this stage, they're just looking like there's no one that can compete. So take the $2.30 now, we'll get the $1.40 as they jump. And in Brownlow markets quickly, Paddy Cripps just drifting a little bit, $3.25. Lockie Neal now into $4.50 and Christian Petrarca at $8. So
can you
that one is a little bit closer.
Can you confirm that Scoot McClure had $10 on Justin Thomas, to win when he was 100-1?
Well, I've been having a look at Sammy's account recently, and I saw no such bet. So I think he might be
telling porkies.
A little bit of a fib.
Yeah, I think Dosh cleared me all out. Good on you, Hummer. We'll chat to you early.
Went down again.
Dosh, yeah.
Still running?
I don't want to talk about Dosh. Let's break and get to Lloydie's top seven.
Now on Sports Day, Lloydie's top seven for Kia. Meet your muse with the all-new Kia Sportage.
It's getting better and better every week. Is the top seven, Jared?
It's everywhere, isn't it? Tonight, it's the top seven sweetener deals in the competition, Lloydie. How far are you going back?
Well, it's sort of in a number of years, Jared. I've just done it in probably the last 40 years. And I think that a lot of them are modern day ones. So it's off the back of the form of Jack Crisp. That's what's given me the idea. So at number seven, I'm not sure which one was the sweetener, but for Salmon to get to Hawthorn,
yep.
Jarman to get to Adelaide, Wellman and Barnard. So I don't know which one was a sweetener, but they were both wonderful players for the Bombers and dominated on grand final day. Number six, I wouldn't have known this one, Jamie Elliott. So the Pies wanted Marty Clark, but he was tied to the GWS when they were coming in. So on top of getting Marty Clark, they gave pick 24 for Marty Clark to the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They got Jamie Elliott on top of that.
Wow.
So I wouldn't have known that one. Neil Danaher, I think he was on top with his brother Terry from the Sydney Swans.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Yeah, from the Sydney Swans. So nice, fair sweetener there. He was arguably the best of them all. Was he, Neil Danaher, if he didn't get his injury or not?
Well, if he didn't. But
yeah, if he didn't.
Geez, it's a
best and fairest winner, was he?
Yeah, Terry was such a great player, though, so it's a big call.
At number four, it was Fev for the first round draft pick of Carlton. Carlton took Kane Lucas with it, but on top they threw in Lachie Henderson. So Lachie Henderson was good for them.
He was a sweetener.
He's a sweetener. Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for Kane Lucas. Dane Beams, it was for early draft picks, but the sweetener it was to get Jack Crisp across too. And what a player he has been for Collingwood. Didn't work out for Beamsy at the Brisbane Lions. At number two, it was Ben McGlynn was going to the Sydney Swans from Hawthorn.
Yep. Josh Kennedy.
And Josh Kennedy went with him for picks 39, 46 and 70.
Yep.
And at number one, I'm not sure where this one sits, but it was Greg Miller. He got Johnny Longmire.
And the sweetener was?
Oh, can I throw 10,000 at you and you give me a guy by the name of Wayne Carey? And Sydney Swans. Was it Sydney Swans in the zone? Said, yeah, okay, you can have him as well. So I think that's the best sweetener the game has ever seen.
That one hurts, Lloydie.
Longmire and Carey.
Because we were in Sydney at the time, and we'd heard about these two kids, and all of a sudden they were no longer gone. 4 years later, they were dominating the competition. But you're right, he was Horse was the number one man.
what did they pay for him? Did you know?
I think it was 60.
60 and then 10.
Right, we've got a minute left. You two. Who's got, if anyone, the weaponry to challenge Melbourne right here, right now?
What do you reckon, Lloydie?
Well, the Blues have a strong clearance team, the high-end pressure, But the worry for me is they can't sustain it for four quarters. Mm-hmm. So
their best footy is the best I've seen this year.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Quarter against Hawthorn, a couple of quarters against Hawthorn, and the stuff against Sydney was amazing.
And Sam made the point off air. Danaher back, McStay back.
And Hipwood as well, who's Hipwood been injured.
Hipwood back. McCluggage, hopefully he can get right. They play twice, though, in the last eight or nine rounds, Melbourne and Brisbane. So we're going to find out.
They played round 23 for
round 23 and I think round 15 as well.
Anyone else? Richmond? The pace of Richmond is, I think, enticing.
Yeah,
they're going to have to get their very best side back on. No injuries.
No, I don't think they have the depth. Fremantle are falling away. Saints not there yet. No, the Cats. So no.
We might not know for a while. Carlton, Melbourne, their first time they play each other is round 22. So the D's finish with the Blues and the Lions.
Yeah, I think the Blues need McGovern back to be genuine challengers.
Your man.
Mr. McGovern.
Great to have you back, Jared.
Good to be here, Scott.
Good luck on Classified, Lordy.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks,
see you tomorrow, folks. You are listening to Sports Diary here for Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Big hour coming up. Jared Healy is back. We're also going to chat to Peter Drury. I know soccer doesn't always get your interest peaking, Jared, but given that Manchester City almost lost the unlosable again overnight, all they had to do was beat Aston Villa and they found themselves 2-0 down at home.
Amazing.
Came back and won it. Anyway, Peter Drury is the voice of the world game. He's going to chat to us, but let's start with the wash-up of round 10. It's all thanks to Polaris, Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. And we'll go all the way back to Carlton and Friday night. Jared, we talked about them a little bit.
It's a good Friday night game, wasn't it?
In the first hour, but it was it was 45,000 packed into Marvel Stadium. Carlton were up and about, which you haven't seen in a while. Thought the Swans dug in. And
it's the best 30 minutes, as I said earlier, it's the best 30 minutes of footy I've seen this year.
Mm.
Their pressure, well, it ranked at 270. It was a world record. And they sustained it for, 40 minutes? Because you saw a fair bit of in the first quarter.
And they nearly ran out of gas.
And then they did, in fact.
they found a bit of gas later.
They just couldn't quite put them away, the Swans. But no, it was a great victory. Great game, actually. And look, people knock Marvel Stadium. That joint is so good to watch a footy game at when it's full. It is amazing.
Yeah, it's a nightmare to get out of, though. And
well, every ground's a nightmare to get out of when they're full.
No, that's not true.
It's not true?
The MCG's not. No, there's plenty. Optus Stadium isn't. No.
Well, it depends on how you're getting out of it. Are you walking out? Are you catching the train? Are you catching the tram?
No, I was catching the train.
Well, what's the biggest difference? What's the difference getting out of Marvel and the G?
Well, if you'd been with me on Friday night, you would have found out. Unfortunately, from whoever's designed that joint, I know they're trying to fix it. Despite the fact that there's a train station 200 metres away.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You can't get enough people across that bridge.
Okay.
So it's just...
Underground access.
As soon as the siren goes...
We get another tunnel.
It's
We get a tunnel, one that works.
Can we call the Premier?
Oh.
Can we call the new
Well,
PM?
If you started it now, it may be finished, 2031?
Yeah, it'd be finished 32? It'd be finished the other time that I retire from radio. We'll be good. The Blues, I think, it's the first time that I can remember in a long time, Jared, that Carlton are missing five or six of their best 22 players, and yet it doesn't really seem to matter.
Not at the moment, no.
No, it might. It might as they face tougher opposition.
Yeah.
But they're going along nicely.
Unfortunately, Oscar McDonald's not coming back. Had the feedback during the weekend when I was talking about the Blues to an insider, and that's probably well known already, but...
They may not get many. I mean, they'll
McGovern's the one. They need McGovern.
I agree with that.
To play big finals successfully, McGovern is the one.
Yep. They'll get Jack Martin back and they'll get Pittenett back and they'll get Mackay back. So there's some good ins.
Oh, some great ins. Yep. Some terrific ins. And probably, who's the other backman that hasn't been there for?
Marchbank.
Marchbank.
Who had a little knee injury playing over the weekend to his other knee.
Oh, did he?
They took him off at halftime. They think it's fine, but he might not play for a week. So he's still a long time away.
They're very exciting for Blues supporters.
Yeah, I agree. We'll go to Saturday afternoon, and the Dogs got over the line against Gold Coast.
Ah, they did more than that. On the scoreboard, they did. They should have won that game by 8 goals.
Yeah, they should have, and yet suddenly with 90 seconds left,
Gold Coast were scoreboard accuracy. The only one place that scoreboard accuracy counts, and that's on the scoreboard.
So you mentioned the umpiring in your editorial in the first hour, Jared, and we had a good chat about it. You're not an umpire basher. In fact, I would say that you are quite often the
opposite. No, I'm a supporter of the umpires.
The opposite, which is why you talking about the umpiring really pricked my ears, because clearly you felt strongly about it. Can we just listen to what Luke Beveridge had to say about the treatment of Aaron Norton, then we'll have a chat about the umps.
Yeah, I've got to be really careful here. He's been so dominant, and then, yeah, there are reasons why he wasn't in the second half. That's all I'll say. No, we'll do some follow-up, but he kept fighting, kept bringing the ball to ground, and that's what he does. So we'll work our way through it through the course of the week. But, he was just outstanding in that first half.
He was too. He was incredible. Jeez, he's a good player to watch.
He is. So you tell me if I'm being too dramatic here, Jared, because at the start of the year we've had this issue which is still going on about descent.
Yep.
Then we've got situations, which I know you spoke about in the first hour, which I agree with you, where young umpires are giving away ridiculous free kicks off the ball. And then we've got a further situation about a premiership coach basically saying that one of his forwards is being targeted unfairly and that not enough free kicks are being paid. I just feel like umpiring as a general issue is starting to reach boiling point.
Oh, it's absolutely a big issue. And it's been it was always going to blow up this weekend after a couple of free kicks we saw pay. Even the Warner one was, look, he ran 17 metres, but I mean, they pay marks that are 8 and 10 and 12 metres.
Yeah, it was just different.
It was an overreaction.
It was right on the line.
And I think that this is the problem that where this zero tolerance of emotion is concerned. It's not dissent. David King was absolutely right saying that is not dissent. Dissent is when you get in the face of somebody or you abuse them.
It's overt criticism.
And when you question something, when it is questionable, that's fair enough. I mean, this is an emotional game. And I find it actually, what's the right word? I find it too clinical when there's a really poor decision made and a bloke just has to sit there and just bat his eyelids. I mean, I think we need to address it. We need to reset it.
But at the same time, we are taught that once the whistle goes, you can't change the
yeah,
decision.
I know that. But
so it's a waste of energy.
It may well be, but it's still human. Yep. It humanises the game. At the moment, it's robotics. And I think it's a lesser spectacle because of it. And I'm not talking about blokes not getting pinged if they go over the top. But there is a level of emotion that needs to be allowed to be expressed. Going back to Luke Beveridge, I think Luke Beveridge is just signalling that his man needs a bit more protection. He's signalling to the... This is not about last week. This is about the next 12 weeks. That he wants his bloke to be able to get to the ball, stop scragging off the ball, etc. And this happens, I reckon, six times a year. Depends on who the dominant forward is.
Happy with North Melbourne's effort?
I didn't see that game, to be honest.
Okay, I did. They were much better.
Well, that was apparent, I mean, just by the scoreboard and talking to a couple of Melbourne supporters.
They really cracked in.
One at three-quarter time I spoke to, he said, game's not over yet. They're having a fair crack.
Yep.
So that's a starting point for the Kangaroos.
And what about Dreamtime, talking about having a good crack?
Well, they had a better crack, but that's fine. But they still got well beaten by Richmond.
Yeah, this is the situation that I was a little bit concerned about in the build-up, was that, Essendon will have a response. So, if I'm a supporter, I'm less worried about the response and more worried about how we keep getting beaten consistently.
Well, they can't defend the ball.
They can't defend the ball where the opposition has possession. And that's, for a side that has been working on themselves tactically for quite some time, that's a concern for Essendon supporters.
Well, it's a massive concern. If it continues on and they finish in the bottom six, it's a concern for Ben Rutten because, Jared,
they're absolutely going to finish in the bottom six unless something changes drastically.
Yeah. I mean, they've got some injuries. We understand that.
I mean, Hawthorne are 13th at the moment and miles in front of them.
Hawthorne. I watched that game yesterday.
I covered that game for The Age, so I saw every second of it.
It was a fabulous game of footy.
Wasn't it?
And, you know, there's no question that Sam Mitchell is a fabulous young coach. And it's just great to see him sort of not live by orthodoxy. He's making his own moves, you know, to tag Lachie Neale after halftime. It was obvious to do it.
Still good.
But most coaches, or a lot of coaches, aren't doing it.
Throwing Frost forward.
Frosty forward. I mean, I thought to myself, what's Frosty doing?
We all thought that.
That was fantastic.
And then he started him on the wing in the third quarter and then moved him behind the ball. He's willing to change them.
I know I sometimes are accused of picking up a lot of lost dogs. But I've always been a Frosty fan. I thought there was always upside in Frosty.
Who accuses you of picking up lost dogs?
Well, there's a lot of people think I get on a few lost dog bandwagons. But anyway, Frosty, I reckon, was always a winner. I think Oscar McDonald, I think, was always going to be a player because they've got pace.
Yeah.
And if he can just minimise their creativity and to get them to kick the ball 20 metres instead of trying to kick it 50 and hit a target. Well, you know, you can get some really good results out of those guys. And, you know, they've been good players, both of them.
Isn't it funny, Jared, that it wasn't long ago that you and I were having a conversation on radio about, well, why are Hawthorn doing this? Not only are they getting rid of Alistair Clarkson for no reason, but they're putting unnecessary pressure on a guy who might need more time before he becomes a senior coach. And I think that was a fair and reasonable comment at the time. But
looks comfortable in the role,
But he looks comfortable, and maybe he's just one of those guys that, unlike others, took to the role. But now, it's still very early, but the signs are, and when you talk to players, that he's got a good thing going.
Well, they clearly got a good thing going. They looked really good yesterday. I mean, they haven't got as much talent as Brisbane Lions, but what talent they've got, they're maximising, and their effort is phenomenal.
Now, Jared, have you got any concerns about your Dockers? Because since you touched down in Java, the Dockers train has just gone down a couple of gears.
That's right. It's off the rails.
A little bit of COVID.
Yep.
A few injuries.
Yes.
Bad running form. And all of a sudden,
I think they've got Melbourne and Brisbane in the next 2 weeks, haven't they?
Yeah, and then St Kilda.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. If you want to play with the big boys, you've got to beat the big boys.
Yeah.
No, I haven't got any concerns. I think they're a good side coming through. As I said, I think they can play big finals. If they finish top six, I wouldn't be disappointed. And I think they will finish top six.
So no concern about them missing the eight?
No, none at all.
Okay, no, just check.
No, not at this stage. I'm prepared to take that on advice or advisement, but we've got a player coming back, the Dockers, and his name...
Fife.
Big pun?
Nat Fife.
Nat Fife. Yeah. Slip him into the middle.
He's not a bad in.
Not a bad in. Let's hope he's ready to go when he rolls.
Now, we've got Peter Drury coming up. Just can I tell you a very brief story from the weekend? So I went to the footy on Friday night.
Yeah.
And I was there with a relatively new friend.
Yes.
Terry. Now, Terry, he's a mad Carlton supporter.
Yeah.
Runs his own...
Well, I'm glad you've clarified. It was a he, not a she.
YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Terry.
Blues Abroad. And I knew that it had a bit of a following. But I went there with him, and we got there 15 minutes before the bounce, sitting in the seats. Within that 15-minute period, there would have been no fewer than six people come up to him and ask for a photo.
Fair dinkum. We've got a new superstar.
And say...
Terry from YouTube.
What you do has changed my life. So Terry runs a live show after every game.
Does he?
Where Carlton fans call in.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, you know, if they win or they lose, how the show goes. And during the game, same. People just coming up out of nowhere at halftime. And at one point, a woman came up with her teenage daughter and said, Terry, your show is unbelievable.
She's got a very big profile on WhatsApp.
Do you mind? I don't know what that was. Thank you, Zoe. Do you mind taking a photo with my daughter?
Yeah.
He said, yep, no worries. Thanks very much. And he's taking a photo.
Long story, this.
And they took the photo, and then she turned to me, and she turned the daughter and said, do you want a photo with Scoop as well? And the daughter said, no, thanks. And walked off.
Well, she's got good taste.
Anyway, the point of the story is...
Is?
I think we've got a new Carlton correspondent.
Oh, good.
And I think at some point...
We'll get him on.
We need to get Terry on.
Terry from YouTube. We're getting him on. A superstar is born. Scoop, it was a long story. I'm glad you got to the finish of it. We'll take a break here on Sports Day. Peter Drury up next.
Lifted in by Sterling. There's one back. There's one back. Ilkay Gundogan got big at the back stick. And Rodri! It's happening again. Kevin De Bruyne! Gundogan! From the brink of despair, elation! Catastrophe! Cacophonic joy!
Yes, welcome back. It was an unbelievable morning. If that doesn't give you tingles, Jared,
no, it was good.
And remind you of that man's call of Aguero, then nothing will, because Manchester City secured an amazing title after three-goal comeback against Aston Villa. It crushed Liverpool's quadruple dreams, and the man that called it has been good enough to get up early and join us on Sports. Hey, Peter Drury, welcome back. What another finish.
It was, wasn't it? It's funny. Everything gets compared to 2012 Aguero and all of that. I guess it wasn't quite in that category, but it was pretty close. The interesting thing was that there was never actually a moment on the day when Liverpool went top because of the order things happened in. But City certainly plays with fire, didn't they? But managed not to get their fingers burned, and it created fantastic drama.
Peter, were they flat early? Were they ill-disciplined? What sort of caused the 2-0 sort of drama that they faced?
Well, I guess old-fashioned Manchester City fans would just say it's sort of in the DNA of the club to have moments like that,
right,
and to create trauma before the drama. But more modern analysis, I suppose, of the team and the way they were is likely to say, not that they froze in the moment, because those guys have played very big games very often, all of them, but that somehow the pressure of the day just inhibited them a bit, and they certainly weren't themselves for the majority of the first hour or so. But they're so good, they are so good, that they could almost do it to order. And, you know, when the moment came, when the order was given, they just did it. And 3 goals in 6 minutes, and it was done.
So, Peter, what do you think this year will be, or this season will be, remembered for Manchester City fans? Because their ability to hang on in really tough times against a rampant Liverpool side who were breathing down their neck was amazing. But I just can't help but think about what happened in the Champions League.
Yeah, well, the Champions League is a running sore. There's no question about that. And what happened when they played Real Madrid and lost in that startling way, and lost a game which, by the way, they had completely bossed. There didn't even feel any jeopardy around that game, and then, or very little. And somehow they found a way to lose it. You're right. Until they win the Champions League, that is going to be an issue with them, and it's going to nag away at them. But I guess in this immediate period, in the aftermath of what happened on Sunday, you know, they are entitled to enjoy what they have achieved. And holding off Liverpool in the way they did has been a fantastic achievement. And they are a terrific team. And somehow, although we were romanticising about the possibility of Liverpool winning all four, the great quadruple and so on, actually, in hindsight now, it would feel wrong if City hadn't won one of the prizes, because they're too good to go without reward, really, because they're brilliant.
So as we come to the conclusion of the season, you look at City and you ask yourself, what do they need to do as far as playing personnel to go further? Or have they got the personnel, as would seem to be evident, but they just need to get it right on the day?
Yeah, well, absolutely. As people will tell you, the European Cup or Champions League is after Christmas, once you're through the group stage. It's a knockout competition.
Yeah.
So you can lose a one-off game, and that's exactly what happened to Manchester City, and it's done. In terms of personnel, it's hard to see how they strengthen the side beyond what they've already done, and that is bring in Erling Haaland, who is a centre-forward, the one that everybody wanted. They've spent gazillions on bringing him in, and he can be the point of difference. And a lot of people have said that if they'd had him this season, you know, that we wouldn't have had the great league title running that we have had, because they'd have just pulled away. So with him in the team, it's going to be fascinating, because he is an absolute monster of a striker.
Do you think, Peter, we've reached a point, well, I know things change quickly, where it's difficult to see for at least a couple of seasons how anyone are going to catch City and Liverpool? I mean, Chelsea are in a really weird spot given their ownership. Manchester United look a long way back.
Well, they're coming to Melbourne to recruit.
Peter might be coming with them. Who knows? We'll have to ask. And then, you know, Tottenham and Arsenal haven't been the sides that they once were for quite some time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And again, there's a theory that does the rounds here, and actually I think it's a very reasonable one, that were it not for the fantastic charisma of Jurgen Klopp and the way he makes his Liverpool team function, then again, we would strip ourselves of the fantastic drama we had, because Liverpool have done brilliantly well to continue competing with Manchester City. And you're right, it's hard to see at the moment how Manchester City are going to lose their grip on it. You know, when Manchester City lose a game, this is not partisanship or disliking them. They're not a disliked club at all. But there's always an added thrill, because it's almost as if the football community is saying, phew, you know, they're not going to run away with it and win it by 15, 20 points. So it's an event when they lose. They're that good. And mercifully, Liverpool have kept it exciting this year. We'll see how Chelsea bounce back under new ownership. As you say, Manchester United is just a brand new project. And listen, these words come back and haunt anyone, but I think we probably have to disregard them for a year or two in terms of who's likely to win the title. Mm. Arsenal are a very young team, gradually getting there, who just slipped up at the end of their project this year. And Spurs are Spurs. They always seem to be close without getting there. But with Conte, you just never know. But no, I mean, in short, the answer to your question is, logically, Manchester City remain the team for the foreseeable future.
Can I ask you about COVID and the impact it's had on this season, if any? I've got a daughter with a business over in the UK, and she says it's a non-factor. Nobody actually even addresses it anymore. If you're a crook, you can still go to work as long as you wear a mask. It's almost irrelevant. Is that the case in professional sports still?
It sort of feels that way. I mean, there has been an impact still of COVID on this season, insofar as back in our winter,
yep,
there were games still being postponed, and the rearrangement of them, the whole rescheduling of them, has made for a more frantic second half of the season. And in particular, the last week or two, they've had to catch up a lot of fixtures, and the timing of them and so on has been a subject for conversation. But essentially, and my goodness me, I'm nervous saying this, it feels as though we are, broadly speaking, back to normal, which is great. And I just say that with trepidation,
yep,
because, goodness me, it only takes, as you know very well, I know, because you've suffered a lot where you are, it only takes something to go wrong and you go back a month or two or six or 12. But at the moment, it feels as though it hasn't been a major factor, and cross fingers won't be.
Well, the good news is, of course, United are coming over to Australia on a recruiting spree just to bolster their stocks. I assume, Peter, you'll be coming with them as the tour guide?
I'm afraid I won't, but I'm sure you'll have a great... Sorry, guys.
It's disappointing.
Manchester United are a big attraction. Will lots of people come out and see them play? Or is the perception of Manchester United sort of damaged by the season they've had?
Oh, I think that's damaged, but I think the brand of Manchester United will see a full house at the G. We'll get 60 or 70,000 people there, I suspect. It's a big brand. I mean, I was taking forward bookings from my favourite restaurant down at Donovan's. I was just wondering, Peter, if I would put you on the list, but it seems as if you'll be going to somewhere a bit warmer, yeah, I suspect.
Which begs the question, Peter, where does the voice of football go on his travels just to get away from football?
You asked about COVID, my family and I, we've remained very cautious, not particularly for health reasons, but because it's such a hassle to travel these days, that we're actually staying in England. We've hired a little cottage down near the coast, and we're going to have a couple of weeks down there. So it's a very unflashy summer holiday for the Drury household this time, but we're going to enjoy that. But listen, Manchester United at the MCG, fantastic. What a scene, what a venue. And I hope people enjoy them. And listen, by the way, for the narrative of the Premier League, we need Manchester United because, as you say, they're such a huge brand. We need them to be strong.
Peter, thanks so much for coming on. What an amazing season. Enjoy the time off.
Thank you so much, guys. Love talking with you.
And the dinner date's still there, Peter, whenever you come.
Thank you. I have the most expensive one on the menu.
Yeah, it's okay.
Peter Drury, the voice of football.
Scoop can afford it.
Well, I'm paying him. One of our favourites. And we didn't even mention the fact that Leeds United actually stayed in the Premier League. They needed to win.
Yeah.
And they had a late winner from one of their players, Jack Harrison.
How many people do you think will turn up? Manchester United playing who?
That's a great question. Melbourne Victory?
Yeah. I think 70 might push it.
No, 70 is about the over-unders.
Because a lot of people come from interstate, I suspect.
The problem is that no one cares about Melbourne Victory, and I say that with love, but that's fact. And
well, not no one.
Sorry, no one, relatively speaking.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Jared, you know I love soccer. I only found out on the weekend that the semi-finals were on.
Yeah, I did say that. Yep.
Did anyone else know that the A-League semi-finals were on? Lawrence didn't know, and Lawrence produces the show. So there you go. I've just got a terrible feeling that if Ronaldo last minute says, I'm not coming.
There's no way known Ronaldo will be here.
Well, then you lose 15,000
right,
for him not coming, I reckon. Whereas
if he comes and
Pogba comes and they name a half-decent side, they might get 80.
I reckon before you buy a ticket, you should be getting a guarantee that those two blokes are on the park.
Yeah, you can't give that though, can you?
You can't, but that's why I suspect it'll be... Look, if they turn up, fantastic, but don't be... Look, buyer beware. Don't buy a ticket expecting him to turn up until they do.
More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, Jared, who's back from Java, was joined by myself and Matthew Lloyd in the studio.
Yeah, I've got to be really careful here. He's been so dominant, and then, yeah, there are reasons why he wasn't in the second half. That's all I'll say. No, we'll do some follow-up, but he kept fighting, kept bringing the ball to ground, and that's what he does. So we'll work our way through it through the course of the week. But, he was just outstanding in that first half.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Jared Healy and Matthew Lloyd in the studio. So that's the voice of Luke Beveridge, Jared, talking about the treatment of his star forward, Aaron Norton, specifically by Sam Collins of the Gold Coast Suns, and saying that they were going to take it to the AFL. It's just another layer of this umpiring issue, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I did the game. I must admit, he was amazing in the first half. It was just a joy to watch a bloke who, he was unstoppable. He was Superman and Batman rolled into one. I didn't quite pick up the restrictions that was put on him. He had Thompson on him before he got injured. They made the move and Collins went on to him. after Thompson got injured. But, I mean, I think it's really, this is about the next 12 weeks rather than what happened on the weekend. He's looking for a bit more protection and sick and tired. It's we've seen the same with, I reckon Richmond were doing the same for Tom Lynch about this time last year. Happens on a regular basis for key forwards.
But I think Luke he'll have to respond again. Now, they'll be asked about it at his next press conference. And you know, I wonder if there's nothing there, does he need to apologise to the Gold Coast Suns? Or would that have happened behind the scenes if there's nothing to see?
Is it a go at the Gold Coast or is it a go at the AFL, do you think, Lloydie?
I thought it'd have to be, yeah, that's a good question. First of all, it's on Collins, thinking maybe the work he was doing off the ball, and then he's not getting rewarded for it. But watching the vision today, unless there's something that we missed or something else, I thought Collins played the perfect game as a defender, and you teach defenders to play that way.
What was he doing that you thought was...
He wouldn't let Norton get that run and jump at the footy.
Okay.
He just kept constant touch on him to not allow him to launch, which you have
The first half, or the first quarter and a half until they moved him, he was playing him in front and Norton just launched.
Mm. He just kept getting touch. He just buffered him, didn't allow it. And no forward wants that. And that's how he played him really well.
Lloyd, he just won off the bat. And it's not a criticism because this kid is, you know, he's a kid. He's in his second or third year. But Matt Rowell had 5 possessions at the end of the match, and he played in the centre for, I think, 100% of it. It might have been 85. But I just wonder what the strategy there is. What was the thinking in the box? They nearly pinched that game with Tuke Miller and him, you know, playing average games, Tuke, and Rowell played a poor game. But 5 possessions and you stay in the middle the whole game, it's bewildering.
Well, the worry for him, I like him, but where else can you play him? That's what he's got to try and develop himself to try and win more outside ball because he always was inside ball and that's it at the moment. There's no outside easy possession.
I think he's been right. I get the feeling, Lordy, there's something going on with the programming. I think he's thinking structures, defence. I mean, this kid grew up just eating the football. Mm. Just go and get the ball, mate.
Yep. Just on that, in the same game, Bailey Smith, his running capacity.
Nice,
so we saw Langdon get shut down by McGuinness.
Yeah.
I can't, the time's got to come where you go, how do we stop this guy? And how do we limit him?
Yep.
You know, Bont's going forward now, so you can play a player on him. I don't think it's worth trying to stop McRae's 40 or, you know, Livers clearance. It's Bailey and what he does because he's inside, he's outside. But I can't wait to see the first person who tries it and whether they can actually cope with this.
Because I'll need a motorbike.
Exactly right, because it's hard to remember. There's Sam Walsh is a freak.
Yeah,
but
he could run with him.
It's interesting to see if there's many in the comp. There'd be probably less than one hand that could go with him.
What about the former Crisp, who was a tagger initially, went in the back line. Now he's just a genuine all-Australian level mid.
Well, that's going to lead later, Jared, into my Kia's top 7.
I like it.
Mm. And it's he doesn't like the word steak knives, so I'm going to use sweeteners. The best
add-ons.
Add-ons, the best sweeteners the game has seen, Jared.
Yeah, I know that everyone seems to be talking about Jordan Dugowie's contract. You'd be offering Jack Crisp a longer term at more money than Jordan Dugowie right now, wouldn't you?
Well, it was interesting. I was thinking about that watching the game. Crisp is just continuing to fire. And
he's a gun.
Dugowie, you know, his upside is incredible. He's got A-grade talent, but he doesn't produce it often enough to warrant the biggest of contracts. How that unravels, Lloydie, is going to be of great interest through the year.
And have you both seen the Sam Switkowski vision since
I have.
It's been directly referred to the tribunal. Any early assessments, Jared?
Well, it looks like simply a chicken wing tackle.
Mm-hmm. Strong tonight from Lloydie, as always. We're going to wrap up Sports Day next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy. If you're moving house, call your local energy retailer, Red Energy. And for Wilson Home, celebrating the biggest cash discount ever. Earlier tonight, we spoke with Sydney coach John Longmire.
Shocking news about Josh Kennedy.
Yeah, awful long-term hamstring injury. Mm. Let's hope it's not the end.
When I saw it, I thought that's what it would be, but who knows?
Let's hear what John had to say.
G'day, gents.
Didn't look like the game of the season from your eyes, I'm sure, at half time, John, but it was a bloody good comeback.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jared. I'm not sure I said it would have been sitting there at half time thinking that, but have 9 goals kicked against us in a quarter. We won the other 3 quarters, and our second half was, we came home really strongly, and the positive to come out of it was we didn't throw the towel in at half time. We came out after half time and had a real crack, and we're a bit wasteful in that last quarter going forward. We didn't really connect with our forward half as well as what we should have. In the end, we sort of won the 3 quarters, lost 1 by 39 points, and lost the game, obviously.
It was an incredible second quarter. I mean, it was just great for the game, great for people watching, whether you're barrack for Carlton or Sydney. It probably didn't matter, but it was just electric. It must have been awesome down on the ground. And the pressure, I think, was a world record of 270 that Carlton brought to bear, which just goes to show that, there are levels and levers that clubs can pull if everybody's pulling in the same direction that can get them to reach great heights.
Yeah, I reckon the Swans supporters probably wouldn't have enjoyed it. I didn't that second quarter. To Carlton's credit, I think for much of that quarter, they were 2.47 pressure.
Yeah.
And that might mean much to the general public, but, if you're sort of working in the footy space from day to day, that's a pretty significant amount of pressure for a sustained period. To their credit, they were very good in that quarter. And, we need to make sure we take the momentum. Sometimes that happens in a game that opposition are going to get a real run on and are really playing well. And for that period, we've just got to make sure that the damage, we limit it a bit before it obviously gets to 9 goals. And if we had to cut it down a bit more than that, somewhere near half, it gives us a chance to win the game. So teams are still going to get momentum. But it's a bit like a couple of weeks ago we played Brisbane. Out of those 2 games, the Brisbane and Carlton game, we've only lost 2 quarters.
Hmm.
But those 2 quarters, we've given up too much ground.
John, so in terms of shutting momentum down and halving it, as you said, from 9 goals to 4, was it what you did after halftime, where you've probably controlled the ball a little bit more? What are the type of levers you can pull to stop momentum?
Yeah, there's a few levers, Lloydie, in there. There's, I think that winning the centre bounces is one. Mm. Obviously, with the 6-6-6 rule, it can be difficult at times, but, I think over the last 5 weeks, we've been equal with Carlton as far as centre bounce clearances. So we've generally been okay with that. There's no question when you get your hands on the ball to be able to just take the sting out of it for a second. We probably didn't do that as well as what we could have. And then just making sure after half time, it was just sort of some basic cracking in. It sounds complicated, but sometimes the game we can complicate the hell out of it. But we just had a couple of secondary stoppages and just got the momentum back that way. Pushed the ball forward, took a bit of distance, and then we're able to score off the back of that.
Can you give us an update on Josh Kennedy, John, in where he sits with his hand? Is it tendon?
Yeah, Lordy, a bit of tendon, unfortunately, for Josh. It was just an unfortunate situation he found himself in with his leg, and he was all out of whack there. He's trying to do the right thing by the team, and unfortunately, he suffered a hamstring tendon injury, not enough to have an operation, but enough to keep him out for a significant amount of time, 8 to 10 weeks. And, that's the first time he's ever had that amount of time out. And, it's obviously a feel for Josh.
Will he look to push hard to play that, get back to play at least a game or two and finals, John?
Well, we had a good discussion with Josh today. He's a beauty, and, he's got a really positive mindset already. He was disappointed and flat that he hasn't missed much footy, but he was also understanding that he's had a really good run as far as injuries are concerned. And he said, "I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'm a really positive mindset as far as getting my rehab right and having a crack and doing the best I can in that space. And then I'll also help you blokes out in whatever space you need to." And so he's going to help us out with some roles at the back end of the year.
John, it seems to be a hot topic for a myriad of reasons. Have you got a view on umpiring right now in the game?
No.
I had about four different options I thought you might have taken, but no is one. Can I just explore a little bit more, though, John? The Chad Warner one worries me to a degree because, I mean, what Chad Warner did after being penalised for running 17 metres, it was natural and it was...
It wasn't descent.
And I just think that the footy world absolutely supports Brad Scott and Andrew Dillon and the push to sort of lead the way. But we've got to make sure we're not making it a robotic response because I think it robs the game of something to a degree.
Yeah, I think when I first came out, I think I was asked about it. And I think everyone's initial response was, we've got to be really clear. You know, there's three umpires on the ground. You've got to be really clear with, is it a descent or not descent? Well, I was always a bit not sure about that. You know, I just think a bit of the old common sense. Back people in that they've got the common sense to make the right call. They don't always get it right, but... you know, I'm not sure whether the umpires have said that was right or wrong, that call. I haven't heard. So, I don't think there was any dissent in what he was doing.
No.
And I understand where the umpires are going and the AFL's going with it, but didn't handle it too bad, to be honest.
So we push on to Friday night, another big Friday night game for Sydney, and it's against the Tigers. They've got a couple of big injuries, but it's almost cutthroat now, isn't it? We're only midway through the season, and yet you're both sitting in that same spot in the eight, and 4 points looks like 8 points.
Yeah, it's a big game, isn't it? I mean, this is what you want to play for, isn't it? Well, last Friday we played Carlton, was it 4v5, and Friday night, and yeah, you have a red hot crack at it, and both teams. We're up for the contest. We were disappointing in the second, but the other three were okay. And then this week, again, another one against a really informed team over the last month. I think they've only lost the two quarters over the last month. So they're they're in strong form, the Tigers. And they're playing, the way you imagine Richmond play. So, we're looking forward to that contest again. And, these are the type of games you want to be playing in. And we're really looking forward to it. Our younger players, our experienced players, we're really looking forward to that contest.
Hey, John, a broader footy one. Post-COVID, where are you at in terms of what you'd like in terms of your coaching staff, development staff, everything to do in a footy department and the things you might want to get for next year? Are there still things that you're a long way off wanting from a footy department perspective and coaching perspective?
I think you put my point of view on this, Lordy, that footy departments have been decimated and the workload hasn't dropped. Initially, when the 3.5 million was carved out of footy departments, there was going to be less than the playing lists. And what happens is that you never want to give your players less service, so you're doing it on a third less staff, and those staff obviously are still on massive pay cuts. So I feel for footy departments across the country because they're all sort of working absolutely to the fingers to the bone, and I just don't think it's right what the industry's doing with footy departments if the way it's been handled, and you would have thought that there would have been some comeback, but still seems a fair way off, unfortunately.
You don't have any more clarity about next year in that space?
No idea. I mean, yep. It seems like the footy departments are ones that are carrying the can, that's the way it is.
Always great to hear from Horse. He's one of the favourites here on Sports Day. And they nearly got the chocolates on Friday night.
It's a great fight back.
Yeah. Will they beat Richmond on the weekend?
That's a very good question. Very good question. It's a tight game. Richmond, of course, have got a couple of omissions, unfortunately for them.
Tom Lynch out with a hammy came.
Swans need to. The Swans need to beat Richmond.
Swans need to beat Richmond.
A lot of
Richmond.
People, I mean, I have yet to be convinced that they're as good as some people say. I think that they can be that good. But at this stage, they're way off their reputation.
Great to have you back, Jared.
Good to be back, Scoop.
We'll be back tomorrow night on Sports Day.